Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Annie the Musical is hard knock lifing to The Sun'll Come Out Tomorrowing again on Broadway. The cast recording is available today from Shout Broadway.
Ah, good afternoon, Miss Farrell.
Good afternoon, Drake. Everyone, this is Annie. She'll be with us for the next 2 weeks for Christmas.
Miss.
Annie, this is everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Now, Annie, what do you want to do first?
The floors. I'll scrub them. Then I'll get to the windows.
Annie, you won't have to do any cleaning while you're here.
I won't?
No, of course not. You're our guest. And for the next 2 weeks, you're going to have a swell time. Now, Cecile will pick out all your clothes.
Green is her best color. No, blue, I think.
Your bath is drawn by Mrs. Greer.
Bubbles. No, soap, I think.
Annette comes in to make your bed.
The silk? No, the satin sheets, I think.
I think I'm gonna like it here.
The original production of this iconic American musical ran from April 1997 to January 1983. The show is, of course, based on the comic strip created by Harold Gray, which was based on a poem by James Whitcomb Riley. This is the second Broadway revival, and it's directed by James Lapine. Bryn O'Malley plays Grace Farrell, Oliver Warbuck's tireless assistant, and she joins us now. Bryn, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
What is it like being in this iconic family American classic musical?
It's a dream come true, with no exaggeration. I definitely grew up watching the movie. I grew up in Michigan, so I didn't get to see a ton of theater. I have a vague memory of seeing some production of Annie when I was very, very little. And I just remember being very jealous of the little girls that were playing the orphans. But I really, like, my sister and I watched the movie, like, every day for, like, 8 years and imagined being everybody in the show. So it's absolutely a dream come true. And it's also super fun because it's kind of a show that's like that for a lot of people. So it's fun to be able to provide that experience for friends and family and be like, I'm in it. You get to come see it on Broadway and like I can show you around afterwards and stuff. So that's been pretty cool.
You were a show kid. You grew up in Michigan, but you liked musicals. Mm-hmm. When did you begin pursuing in earnest a career on the stage?
Relatively late compared to the orphans in our show and most of the people in it. My mom was always very supportive in terms of the arts. So it was always like, you know, we're going to watch this musical and then you're going to practice piano and you're going to go to dance class and you're going to paint a picture and then you're going to journal about it when you get home. Like it was one of those households. So she was always very encouraging in all areas. So I was more interested in being a writer as like a young kid and then got into being a musician as I got older. And I was like, had it all mapped out when I was 13. I'm going to be a viola performance major and that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to get in a symphony somewhere. And then I did like the high school musical and just had like a blast. The next year I got the lead in the show. And, you know, you have that moment where people start telling you you're really good. And you're like, really? more than they were telling me I was good at the viola. And I remember seeing a production of The Music Man at the University of Michigan that was 15 minutes away from my house. And they have one of the best musical theater BFA programs in the country. And I saw the show and I just remember being like, what is this? Like, you can major in musical theater? That's like majoring in pony rides and lollipops. Like, that makes no sense. You can do this? And like, I could do this and like go to my dad and be like, here's my degree from a Big Ten school, so we're cool. And it's 15 minutes away from my house. So that was kind of like it all kind of clicked when I was about like maybe 16 or something, where I was just like, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can justify this to my parents because there's like a I'm padding it. There's control because I'm getting a degree, and you know that's fallback and all this stuff. So I think when all that clicked in, I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I sort of allowed myself to really fall in love with it and get kind of swept up.
I grew up in upstate, almost Canada, New York, and like you just mentioned, you grew up in Michigan. Did you always watch the Tony Awards on TV?
Oh, I thought you were gonna be like, do you always cross the border to Canada to drink? No.
that would have been not relevant, but. Fine, yes.
Appropriate, I'm sure, for all the children listening. Yeah, I watched them, right, like in high school. I was just like, what are these Tony Awards? Like, I didn't know. And I remember, like, we didn't have cable. So, like, I remember, like, trying to adjust the bunny ears on our TV to, like, get it on CBS, like, the year it was, like, Ragtime and Lion King. I remember, like, keeping that fuzzy tape that I had where, like, the sound was really bad and it was all crunchy. But I was like, anything. Like, this is my only chance to see it. Yes, definitely.
And when did you come to New York?
I moved to New York the fall after I graduated from college in 2003. So we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
What are the challenges or pleasures and or pleasures of playing Grace Farrell in Annie?
Let's see. That's a great question. Pleasures. It's nice to feel, and all these things really didn't become clear until we got deep into rehearsals, but I do weirdly feel like, other than Annie, I do feel like a bit of a through line with all the characters. We have a lot of characters in the show that don't even appear on stage together till like the last 5 minutes, and it's about 5 seconds. So I feel very lucky that I get to interact with all the other principals and the orphans and the ensemble, and I get to see and interact with everybody, and it's fun to, at least the way James Lapine and I have decided to play Grace, decided for me to play Grace. It's nice to discover more and more things every night that make her such a unique woman in 1933. Because I think oftentimes there's the pitfall of playing Grace is that she just stands in the back and smiles and is sweet to everybody. And James Lapine and I sort of talked early on, I think even in the audition, of that would make absolutely no sense. Why would Oliver Warbucks hire someone like that to run his whole shebang? And so we started to come up with, well, who is she, and where does she come from, and why is she like the way she is? And, you know, she's a reflection of her boss. So it's been fun to sort of come up with her backstory, and what a unique person that would be to have a job and such a high-ranking job in 1933, being a woman. Mm-hmm. And then going from there, the really fun thing is to then, we still have to end up in the same place. We still have to end up in love with Annie and, you know, in love with Oliver Warbucks. We'll save it for Annie, too. You know, you still have to get there. So it's been fun to sort of develop her journey, which has been sort of exciting. It's fun to play that. I start in one very specific place at the beginning of the show and end in a very different place. And Annie brings that out in Grace, and that's really fun to play.
And she'd have to have guts to handle Miss Hannigan the way she does.
Yes, yes. I think Grace is well educated, and she is no dummy. And I think she's got street smarts too. She has to have a pretty thick skin. Has to have at least developed one to get where she's gotten in life. So I don't think she's intimidated that easily by Aggie Hannigan.
There is an old saying in the entertainment industry: don't work with kids or dogs.
Yeah.
Or animals, yeah. Generally, and you're doing both here, but it seems to be going okay.
It's going great. Like, I found out I was doing Annie, I think, about a year ago, and the months leading up to it, I was just like, oh no, like, so grateful to be doing it and excited and everything, but I was like, this could be a nightmare because of that. Like, I love animals, but I'm not like a huge dog person. I don't have a dog. And I love kids. I have 6 sisters, but like, I don't know what it's like to work with child actors. You know, the few shows I've done, there's always like 1 or 2, but they're very removed and you never see them. And so I didn't know what that was going to be like, especially working with them. And amazingly enough, working with the kids has been the best part of the experience for me. It's my favorite part of the day is when I see them and hang out with them. And it's been amazing to watch them grow as actors in front of me. It's awesome to see a moment when like something goes wrong on stage or something's different and you see them click into like, oh, I'm going to improvise or I'm going to do this in character. And you see them growing and changing with their parts and stuff. And it's like, it's the most beautiful thing to watch in the world. And they're absolutely hysterical. Like, you can come into the theater in the worst mood and just be like, I don't want to be here. I don't feel well. I want to go home. And as soon as you see them, they're just like, brain, 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 brain. And they have so much to say and so much to tell you. And they've got bits they want to do and they want to show you some video they made. And it's like, you can't even keep up. You just immediately start laughing and you're sucked into their world and you're out of yourself. And it kind of wipes your ego away immediately.
They are, not that I've seen everything, but seeing other things with kids, these kids are, they're not too precious.
No.
They are so, so talented, like intimidatingly talented, and very real.
Yes. You can thank James Lapine for that, I think. He did an extensive search for the orphans and handpicked them, and I believe even had like separate meetings with their parents and then meetings with them without their parents in the room because he wanted to make sure. He said he wanted to make sure that the kids that he hired really wanted to be there and were excited. And it wasn't just because their parents were making them do it or it's a job or it's like they want to be a star, so this is their vehicle. It's like these are kids who really want to be in the show. And he put them through such an ordeal because he also wanted to see, like, will they keep it up? Will they maintain their show? You know, not kids that can blast out a song one day and then be bored and then just not do it again the next day. Can you do it three times in a row? They're amazing. For child actors on Broadway, they are about as grounded as you can get. It's pretty amazing.
How does this compare to your previous Broadway experiences?
I have replaced a lot on Broadway, meaning for the person, in layman's terms, a show when it opens on Broadway brand new or a brand new revival or something, you get to work with the director, you develop the character, you have a lot of freedom to come up with what your idea is. Like the costume designers will come and talk to you and be like, what do you think? And like the wig people will talk to you about your hair, and you really get to kind of put your own stamp on something and really create something, you know, in the collaborative process. And when you replace on Broadway, when I leave the show at the end of my contract, somebody will come in and replace me, and she's not going to have as much freedom as I did. There's going to be, you know, the blocking's already set. These are your costumes. This is your wig, and this is sort of how the scene goes every night. So you've got a little bit of wiggle room, but this is kind of how it needs to be played. So I've gotten very good at doing that because that's usually what I do. So the most exciting thing about doing this show is really getting to create something for the first time.
At intermission, when I saw the show, the little girl in front of me, I'm bad at guessing kids' ages, I would guess 10. Mm-hmm. She was there with her grandmother and her little brother, who was a lot younger, maybe 6. They were talking so enthusiastically about the sets, which I loved because, I mean, they loved everything, but they were like, can you believe these sets? Yeah. When you first saw the sets, because they are truly gorgeous, the way that the Warbucks Mansion is like a storybook, what was your experience when you first saw them?
What's hilarious is my introduction to the set, we have a designer presentation the first week of rehearsal, and David Corins, our wonderful set designer, came in and showed us models and drawings and things like that, and to sort of illustrate like what it's going to be. He's like, all these things are being built. This is what they're going to be. And that, for the most part, is what I've seen of the set, because unless it's something that I'm not in, once we got to the theater, I never get to see it. Like hilariously, I keep saying to people, like, everyone keeps talking about how amazing the mansion stuff is and you're going to like it here. And I'm like, I don't even know what's happening behind me. I just know that people are dazzled. And if I move 6 inches differently than what I normally do, I'm dead. So
a wall will knock you over.
But the stuff that I have seen is gorgeous. And so it's just... David, I don't want to mess up his catchphrase, but it's a very funny story. But unexpected but inevitable. I want to say that was the phrase that he used for his idea for Annie. Like he had said he was trying not to be too obvious. He wanted to have something cool and new with Annie, and he had originally designed the mansion without a chandelier. And I believe he said that one of his children was like, "Dad, you can't have Warbucks Mansion not have a chandelier. He doesn't look rich enough." He's like, it's Annie. He has to have a chandelier. And he was just like, you know what? There's something to be said for that. He's absolutely right. So his goal was to find something unexpected in every set design, but also still provide the inevitable, which is the chandelier or the amazing staircase or, you know, some sort of awesome bed situation for the orphanage, you know. So he found like a nice twist on the traditional all the way through, and that's been the most fun thing to see about it. It's just like, and it's also, there are surprises in the set during the show, and it's always fun to hear the audience go, when it happens.
I want to talk about one more of your credits before I let you go, because it is one of my favorite shows.
Oh,
you were in Avenue Q.
I was in Avenue Q, yes, in Las Vegas.
Oh, that must have been weird in Vegas.
Weird doesn't even begin to cover it. We were the first company of people besides, I think the Princeton on Broadway had left. Johnny Tartaglia had left and he had been replaced. And then Rick Lyon, who had designed all the puppets and played Trekkie Monster, he left the show to come to do Vegas, as did Johnny. So we were the first like group of people that were like civilians. Actors trying to be puppeteers. So it was kind of a grand experiment in that sense, because none of us had really any experience with it before. It was also a grand experiment because it was a big thing at the time of, you know, Broadway's coming to Vegas, and Avenue Q was supposed to be the show that like was the introduction of like a full length musical, traditional Broadway, and like you're going to come to Vegas and now Vegas will be this legitimate second city for theater. And it was supposed to sort of lay the groundwork for that. It was also like during like that big boom in Vegas when like everybody was buying real estate there, and it was getting very like Steve Wynn was very like a household name, and it was getting very like hoity-toity, where like instead of Vegas being like this crappy place where, you know, awful people go to do awful things, you also could go to a fine art gallery in the penthouse of the hotel you're staying at. You know, like rich people were going there to party. So they thought like naturally live theater should be a part of this, musicals. So the whole thing was a huge experiment. I was very young, but very excited, and I moved to Las Vegas, and I was there for 9-10 months, I think, before we closed. It was completely overwhelming. I often thank the Lord that I was so young and stupid enough to not really understand how much pressure I was actually under and how much heavy lifting I was doing playing Kate Monster opposite Rick Lyon and John Tartaglia at age, I don't even know, like 25, I think I was. Like, ooh, thank God. Thank God I really didn't get it.
Bryn, it has been so awesome to talk to you. Thank you very much for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bryn O'Malley plays Grace Farrell in the Broadway revival of Annie the Musical, which is currently running at the Palace Theater in New York City. To learn more about the show, visit AnnieTheMusical.com. The cast recording is available from Shout Broadway today. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
NYC!
The shadows at sundown, the roofs that scrape the sky.
NYC!
And a mayor 5'2". No other town in the whole 48 can have compared to you.
NYC!
You make them all postcards. You crowd, you cram. You're still the champ. Amen for NYC!